we are holding on Samach Aleph Omer Beis, about 15 lines from the bottom, line of the Vinyan. Still talking about the construction of the Mizbeach, and that we talk about the location of it, so now we're going to talk more about the conclusion of the last part, was that you had various Vinyan about when the Mizbeach is damaged, that you couldn't eat Korbanos over there, and that led into a whole discussion about the comparison between Bechor versus Meiser, versus whatever, and
you can sprinkle
blood, and you can eat Korbanos. Shechter, history, and Shechter, I mean, they're possible, let's be said, from the man and the bad damage. Right. So, Snanhot, we learn in a Mishnah, in Midas, the Mishnah starts by describing over there how the original Mizbeach in the first Beis Mikdash from Shlomo HaMelech's time was 28 by 28 at the bottom. And then you have an inset of one amma for the Yisod, an inset of one amma for the Sover, and therefore you come up the top surface of the Mizbeach is 24 by 24 ammas. And then
the Sover and the
Yisod are indented one each, the one on each side.
Each other.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We can talk about that before. Okay. So the Mishnah says, "Sha'olu b'nei Agoila," when the people from the Golus, from Golus Bavo, came up to build the second Beis Mikdash, for a sequel of Dalad Amas min Adorim and Dalad Amas min Amayrov, they added to the Mizbeach, they added four amos along the south and four amos along the west, coming gamma in the shape of a Greek letter gamma. In other words, they enlarged the Mizbeach by four, well, that's what we're going to discuss. They enlarged it by four amos in each of two directions, so therefore it comes out now, so it's 32 by 32 at the bottom, 28 by 28 at the top. Tosfos, by the way, discusses, Rabbi Tam has a bit of a...
The four difference didn't change.
Yeah, right. The four, right, from the bottom to the top, right, that didn't change. In Tosfos, Rabbi Tam points out, it's a little hard to say how we could be adding to the south. We established before in the previous perek that the border of Yehuda ran right next to the Mizbeach, on the south and on the east, and that's why those two sides didn't have it, third. And now if you're going to be adding four amos on the south, then you're encroaching on the territory of Yehuda. So Rabbi Natan wants to say that the two sides they added on are actually not the south and the west, but rather the north and the west, which are the two sides that were completely in the territory of Binyamin. Okay, Tosfos then ends up asking a number of questions on that, and ends up saying that, no, okay, it was as we have it in front of us, the video, it was on the south and on the west. What about for the south and encroaches in the territory of Yehuda? No, what it is, Tosfos says, what it is, in the Bayis Rishon, the edge of the Mizbeach was not actually along the border between Yehuda and Binyamin. It was actually four amos in. Therefore, they were able to have Yisod in into Binyamin's territory. So therefore, they were able to have a Yisod on the southern side. When we learned in the previous parak, there was no Yisod on the southern side and on the eastern side. That's in the second Beis Mikdash. In the first Beis Mikdash, Tosfos wants to say, based on the Gemara over here, since the Mizbeach was smaller and since even its southern side was completely in Binyamin's territory, then they did have a Yisod on that side. The only side in the first place, especially that didn't have a Yisod, according to that, would be the eastern side, because the eastern side still remains. Again, the location of the Mizbeach relative to east and west didn't change. It's only relative to north and south. Yeah. Okay. Fine. So those are the various possibilities. Fine. Sigma says, my time. Now, why did they do that? Why did they enlarge the Mizbeach by four amos in each direction? Amar of Yosef, Mishum B'lei Sofek, Mishum B'lei Sivik. So Rav Yosef says, because the old Mizbeach wasn't large enough, they didn't have enough space, so therefore they had to enlarge it. Only Abayah says, how is that possible? Hashta Mikdash Rishon, let's contrast. When it comes to the first Beis Mikdash, you have the expression, Dechibbe Yehuda v'Yisrael, v'Yisrael Rabin Kafel Asher Alayom. The Yehuda and the rest of Yisrael were as many, as numerous as the sand by the seashore.
Seashore,
by the seashore in general, whatever. The point is, even if you talk about the seashore of Yisrael, whatever, it's still a vast number.
Okay, whatever,
it doesn't matter. The point is, that's a figure of speech anyway. Sipik, it was enough. The Mizbeach 28 by 28 was enough for all their korbanos. Mikdash Sheni, Dechibbe Kalakorka, Echad Abed Riboy. You're telling me the second Beis Mikdash, where when they came up to build it, there were only 40,000 and some of them, lois sipik. You're telling me it wasn't enough? How is that possible? Amalei, Rav Yosef said, yes, because hasam esh shel shamayim sayatam, because the difference is, in the first Beis Mikdash, you had the fire that came down min hashamayim, that was discussed at the end of it yesterday, the fire was on the Mizbeach, and sparks of it went to the other Mizbeach, or sometimes here, sometimes there, whatever. So that fire, min hashamayim, helped them and boomed up the korbanos quickly. And second Beis Hamikdash, you didn't have that. We learn in Yuma that there's five things that were missing in the second Beis Hamikdash. One of them is the fire. So we say there was actually a fire in Min HaShemayim, but it didn't have the same effect as the one from the first Beis Hamikdash. It crouched in a different shape. Instead of in the first Beis Hamikdash, it was like a lion, and the second Beis Hamikdash was in the shape of a dog, but also it didn't have the same effect. Not so powerful, but also, as far as burning the korbanos, it wasn't so powerful as far as burning them up quickly. So therefore, yes, they needed a larger mizbech. Okay. So that's one meal. She also Robin Amr of Shimon ben Paz and Mishnah Bar Kapara. When Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported that Rav Shimon ben Paz said in the name of Bar Kapara. There's a different reason why they added on two sides of the mizbech. Now, it's a given. The reason that we're going to discuss over here has to do with only one side of the mizbech. However, we're going to say later on that one of the things that's essential that must be in the mizbeach. No, in principle, they would have only had to do one side for the reason that we're going to say. However, we're going to say later on the mizbeach must be square. That's one of the essential things about the mizbeach, that it must be square. So therefore, if they had to add on one side, of necessity, they have to add on another side to keep it square. Okay. So what is it? Shifting Hasifu. What it is they enlarge the Beit HaMikdash in order to make the place of the shifting be part of the mizbeach. The shittin, whatever, are the drainage holes that go under the mizbeach. So later on, on Samach Gimel, we describe how that when they poured nesachim on the mizbeach, they would pour them in that holes or little basins at the top of the mizbeach that they pour the wine into, and on Sukkot also the water, and they would run down through cavities in the mizbeach, down underground. Ah, well, just for that in a minute. So they had that. So it ran down through cavities there on underground. Also, there were holes in the yisod for the blood that was spilled onto the yisod. Same thing, for which they eventually drain out. So those shittim, this pit that was next to the mizbeach where the nesachim would go into it, originally was outside the footprint of the mizbeach. Now they enlarge the mizbeach in order to include that in the footprint of the mizbeach. So primarily those are on the south and on the west side. That's why they had to add on the south, and that's why they had to add four amos on the south and on the west side. Now, why did they do that? Me'ikra Savor, originally when they built the first Beis HaMikdash, the Savora was, why should that not be part of the Mizbeach? Because the Pasuk says Mizbeach Adama, the Pasuk says it should be a Mizbeach of earth, implying Shehu Otrum Ba'adama. That has to be completely solid, like the earth, like you just said, not hollow, and therefore you can't have these shifting. You can't have these drainage channels and this pit underneath it be underneath the mizbeach. Necessarily, they have to be next to it. So in the first place, that's when they poured them the stuff, and they poured them in such a way that they'd run down the side of the mizbeach. But all of a sudden, but then when it came to the second mizbeach, they realized as follows. You have to figure, see a tachila. On the other hand, you have to take the view, the drinking that's done on the mizbeach, meaning of the nesachim, has to be similar to the eating, to the consuming of the korban. Not the drinking when you pour the nesachim, when you pour the wine and the water on the mizbeach. Has to be similar. That's called drinking. This is, in a sense, if you were to personify the mizbeach, it would be like a person drinking. And that has to be like the achila. Just like the achila has to take place on the mizbeach, that's where you burn the emurim and the pieces of the korbanos. The same thing has to be with the shtia, with the nesach, and also have to be actually on the top of the mizbeach. Therefore, they realized, my mizbeach adama, so why are we calling it a mizbeach of earth? Meaning, not like they thought in the first Beis HaMikdash, that it has to be solid. But shuhum chuba ba'adama, all it means is it has to be completely attached to the ground. Shalo yivnena lo yagab kippin v'lo yagab mechila. Fine. It means you can't build the mizbeach on top of vaults, on top of arches, or on top of underground tunnels or caves. So in this case, fine. So the pit that makes up the shift in Tosafot says that's necessary for the mizbeach. So that's an exception to the rule.
Why
that's what we're saying. Shtia kachila. Because now we're saying that the drinking of the mizbeach
couldn't let it be on the mizbeach.
No, that's the point, in other words. Now you have to have that there's holes on top of the mizbeach that you pour the wine and the water to, and they drain through the body of the mizbeach and eventually into the pit. So therefore, they realize that the pit has to actually be under the mizbeach. So then that way the shtia is like the achila. Interesting thing. I mean, so the Sfat Emes asked the question, so what, does that mean during the first Beis HaMikdash they were doing it wrongly? What do you mean? That originally they had a Svara and later on they had a Svara. He says a brilliant idea. We just said before that in the first Beis HaMikdash they had the fire, Min HaShemayim, that actually burnt the Korbanos. Now, the Gemara in Yuma tells us that that fire, Min HaShemayim, has certain special properties, and one of them is that it also burns up and consumes liquid just as much as solid. So therefore, in the first Beis Mikdash, even they were pouring the Nesachim not onto the Mizeach itself, nevertheless, the fire, Min HaShemayim, was still consuming. Whereas in the second Beis Mikdash, since we just said the fire wasn't doing that, then they realized, well, then we actually have to have that the pouring is done in such a way that it actually goes into the body of the Mizeach.
Why there wasn't fire in the second
Mishnah? Because the second Mishnah was missing a number of things from the first one, because they had a lower level of Kedusha over there, and one of them they didn't have. The Rumatomim, they didn't have the Rahasar, so there's five of them. Had the order, and there were five things that were missing. One of them is the Eishmanesh Ramah.
And the third Mishnah,
the third Mishnah, which of course will have it, yeah. But actually, some of Farshim point out that the third Mishnah is going to be the same size as the second one, but the verse is, once you had it with larger, so it doesn't fit with this idea of Eish Shal Shamayim, but the idea is once they had it larger in the second Beis Mikdash, they're not going to shrink it for the third Beis Mikdash. Okay. Alright. Amar Rav Yosef, Lav Hainu Dichtanya, so Rav Yosef said, but isn't this what we said in a Braisa? Now, Rashi points out, we find in a number of places in Shas that Rav Yosef at one point became sick and forgot his learning. So sometimes he would, sometimes he'd say something and then realize that he had actually learned previously the other way around. So here he doesn't realize that he himself had said that in the first Beis Mikdash they had the fire that was helping to burn the karbonis, and in the second Beis Mikdash they didn't. So he asks, then how could we say that they didn't need a larger one in the first Beis Mikdash, but they needed a larger one in the second Beis Mikdash? He says, I have a pasuk. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa that when it says in the pasuk in Ezra, they built the Mizbeach on its foundation, on its proper place, meaning sheiziu the first midosa. That expression in the pasuk means that they actually figured out the proper size that it's supposed to be. In other words, Rav Yosef is saying, based on this braisa, it sounds like all along in the first Beis Mikdash, in fact, they might not have been right about the size that they made it. They might actually have made it too small. And then only in the second Beis Mikdash did Hashem help them to realize the actual size of it.
How do you draw that from this?
Because by Yachinu HaMizbeach, HaMachanosev, they readied the Mizbeach, implying like they made it completely ready. Yeah, made it completely ready, like they actually figured out the proper size of it. So on the face of it, but the problem is, but you have a pasuk in Yirmiyahu Yamim where David tells Shlomo, you should know, all the blueprint of the Beis Mikdash, all of it was given in writing from the hand of Hashem, who helped me understand. So it was all given Baruch HaKodesh. So what do you mean that Shlomo didn't know the proper size of the Mizbeach and only the Anshik Nefzagdol figured it out? You can't. So if you say that we said before that in the first Beis Mikdash they didn't need a larger one because they had the Eish Shal Shamayim, and then in the second Beis Mikdash then they did, then fine. But if you're going to tell me this that we were just saying, that the difference is before they figured the Shittin don't need to be part of it, and now they figured it does, or they figured out the proper size of the Mizbeach and it doesn't seem to fit, how is it they would have known something that Shlomo did? Al-Mukhanoisa means on its proper spot, meaning that it was the proper size that it's supposed to be. That's the point, in other words, that Rav Yosef is asking, how is it possible that it sounds like from that they knew the proper size, which Shlomo didn't. How is such a thing possible? Okay. Ela Amar Rav Yosef, so no, Rav Yosef says, here's the deal. Draw Ashkach the Darosh. What it is the Chachamim of the second Mishnah, the Anshek Nefzagdola. What it is they found a pasuk also in Divrei Yomim and darshan from it appropriately, which Rashi goes on to say Shlomo didn't understand to darshan this pasuk properly. This pasuk that we're going to quote now, that the Anshek Nefzagdola derived from it something that even Shlomo didn't realize about the proper size of the Mizbeach. Namely, the pasuk says, "Vayomer David, Zehu Beis Hashem Alekim." After David found the place in the granary of Arav Nahayavosi and built the Mizbeach over there, so the pasuk says,
"How did he know?" He knew
because Hashem told him to go to the granary of Arav Nahayavosi. Amala, a Navi came and told him whatever to go build the Mizbeach over there. So that was the place of the Mizbeach. So, "Vayomer David, Zehu Beis Hashem Alekim." This is the place of Hashem. This is the house of Hashem Elikim. This is the place where the Beis Mikdash will be built. V'zem Mizbeach la'ola l'Yisrael. And this is the Mizbeach for Olas, for the Jewish people, which means there's a Hekesh in the pasuk. Ki bayis, so the hekesh between the house, meaning the heichel, and between the kodesh, that is, and the, the heichel. Between the heichel and the mizbeach. Ma bayis, shishim amma, ach mizbeach, shishim amma. Just like the house, meaning the kodesh plus the kodesh hakadoshim, together was 60 amas long. The heichel, the kodesh was 40 amas long, and the kodesh hakadoshim was 20 amas long, so 60 total. The Kodesh is, the Heichel is generically the name for the whole building.
Right, so it
contains the Kodesh, the Kodesh Kodashim, the Ulam, the Toyim all around, yeah.
So that was 60?
That whole building was 100, but the part of it that consists of, the Heichel, the Kodesh plus the Kodesh Kodashim, this.
The one ones that have the pictures.
That have, I don't know. I'm not sure where they are right now. I don't know. Whatever, anyway, it's fine. This will do for our purposes. This will do for our purposes. This is the whole Heichel building.
Right.
Within that, you have the Kodesh, and you have the Kodesh HaKadosh.
Right.
Around that, you have Toyim and drainage channels and various other things that make it larger. But that's the primary thing of it is the Heichel and the Kodesh HaKadosh are total 60 amas.
Right.
So therefore, just like that, it's 60 amas. So also, Ach Mizbeach Shishim Amah, the same thing, the maximum size of the Mizbeach can be 60 Amah. If they want to make it 60 by 60, they could do that. So Shlomo, so Rashi understands that, so Shlomo didn't understand that that's the case, so the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah understood that that's what the Pasuk is implying, and therefore, in other words, the Mizbeach can be enlarged all the way up to 60 Amah, and therefore, since they needed to enlarge it, because like we said before, because the fire in HaShemayim wasn't effectively burning the Karbonos, and therefore they have license to enlarge it, they only needed four, but that's all they needed to enlarge it by, but that was enough.
So, one second, who made the decision not to make it 60?
The Nevi'im of that time, we're going to say. The Nevi'im of that time. Actually, it's interesting, because the Rambam actually has an expression that he says that the location of the Mizbeach is very exact, and you're not allowed to change it, and so forth. So one question, so some of the Mephoshim ask, what about our Gemara over here that implies that you can enlarge it all the way to 60 amas? So some of the Mephoshim explain that Rambam may understand on the basis of the Gemara further down on the Amud that maybe Rav Yochanan, who says something later about this, maybe disagrees with Rav Yochanan. Rav Yosef is saying that you can gaishen that process to enlarge it all the way up to 60. Rav Yochanan, we're going to say something soon about Nevi'im telling them about the proper place for the Mizbeach. So Rav Yochanan may be disagreeing with Rav Yosef and saying that it can't be enlarged all the way to 60.
But not
all the way up to 60, right? Another possibility also, I think, that Fasem has talked about, maybe you could say that the 60 that Rav Yosef is talking about is the state of the Kevesh plus the Mizbeach. The Kevesh, we're going to learn later on, is 32 amas long, the Mizbeach is 32, but once you subtract the Sozer and the Yesod or whatever, so you have, in other words, the whole space taken up by the Kevesh and the body of the Mizbeach could be said to be 60. So that might be another way of understanding it. So they understood, in other words, so again, the first basic message, in other words, you would have had the Mizbeach is 28, and it's 28, again, subtract the Yesod and subtract the Sozer and whatever, and that plus the Kevesh is not quite 60 amas yet, it's 56 amas. So therefore, they realize they have license to enlarge it by up to 4 amas.
Well, they made, the Kevesh?
Yeah, the Kevesh for Pashtus would have been pretty much the same. With no particular reason for it to be different. Fine. Okay, so I'm going to ask, in general, when they came to build the second Beis HaMikdash, the Shlomo Bayis Minkir of Tzedakah, I can understand how they knew exactly where to build the Heichel, because they could tell that you could still see the outline of it. So the remnants of the walls or the foundations of the walls or whatever were still there. The Heichel was a solid building after this.
When they came to build
the second Mesnekesh, how did they know to build
the foundation?
They saw the foundations from the first one. In fact, there's other places, I think some place in Medrash says that primarily Nebuchadnezzar and his armies primarily destroyed the ceiling of the Mesnekesh. They didn't destroy the walls all the way down to the ground, so therefore they came back 50 years later and they were still recognizable where the walls had been. They also, I think, maybe not the walls, as in particular Nebuchadnezzar and his army didn't destroy the floor. After the second Mesnekesh, one of the things we mourn on Tisha B'Av is that the Romans plowed up the area of the Heichel, so that it became not recognizable. But after the first Mesnekesh, they didn't do that. So the first, to find where to build the Heichel, that they could see. They could see the foundations where the walls had been. El Mizbeach Meno Yandi, but how did they know exactly where the Mizbeach was supposed to be? Now, the Mizbeach, we learned in the last Perek, it was poured using a mixture of plaster and concrete, plaster and then lead and whatever. It's not something that, you know, it didn't really have a foundation, so to speak. It wasn't a solidly built thing. So after all these years, any trace of it would be gone. How did they know? Amr of Allah, Rome is Be'ach Bonu, you may call a Sarah Gadol Omer of Makrivala. They saw in a Nevuah, They saw the Mizbeach as if it was already built. And Michal, the great Malach, the Chachamim, that time, Nanshik Nefzagur. They saw Michal, the Sar HaGadol, that when they came to build the second Mizmikdash, yes. How do they know where the Mizbeach is? They see Michal, they see as if it's already built, and Michal, the Sar HaGadol, standing over there, Omer Makrivala, and he's bringing Karbonis on it. Some of the Mechorishim explain that what it means is they saw Michal by the Mizbeach Lamaila in Shemayim doing that. In fact, there's a Tosfos at the end of Menachos that brings from a Medrash that says, what is Michal Makruv on that Mizbeach? He's Makruv in the Shemus of the Tzaddikim, Hashem. Because ultimately the idea of a Korban is to bring something closer to Hashem, to Elokus. So therefore, so that's Michal's job. Anyway, the point is, so one of the explanations is that what they saw actually is they saw Michal standing in up Lamaila and being Makriv on the Mizbeach over there, and since the Mizbeach over there is exactly parallel to the Mizbeach down here, then they knew the exact location. Rav Yitzchak Nachum, Rav Yitzchak Nachum says a different way they knew. Ekrei Shol Yitzchak Rosh Munach Boitimokim. They saw the ashes of Yitzchak lying in that place, which told them, therefore, that was the place of Akedah Yitzchak. Now, of course, Yitzchak himself wasn't actually burnt to ashes, because, of course, Abraham didn't end up checking when he brought a ram instead of him, but that's considered as if Yitzchak himself had been, as if it was the ashes of Yitzchak, because he was ready to be moved to Nefesh for again. And therefore, again, they realized that's the proper place in the bed. Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni, Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni says a third possibility. Mikol habayis kulei harichu reach teres. What happened was, everywhere they went in the, around the place of the Beis Hamikdash, they smelled the fragrance of teres. Misham harichu reach evarim. But from the spot where the Mizbeach had stood, instead they smelled the smell of evarim, of limbs of korbanos burning. Obviously it was Minashamayim that the smell of the Maharsha points out. The smell of the Tertus wafted all the way as far as Yerichle, which is miles away from Yerushalayim, for sure. During the time of the Beit Mikdash, but still, the Pashas, it would have overpowered the smell from the Mizbeach, but Hashem arranged it for this way they should realize the exact location of the Mizbeach.
Well, if I was to do that now,
well,
it would be nice.
Well, I mean, in general, you have smells, the most ruchniest picture of all our senses. But, you know, it says Mashiach will judge by smell, for example. Smell is more so. There's an expression the Gemara has that it's a hanah that the Nishama has a hanah from it and not the goof.
And so?
Your body has hanah from what it hears. Okay, bro. Everything goes to the Neshama ultimately, but smelling a fragrance is something special to the Neshama. You tell me, why do we smell the Summing of the Shabbos instead of listening to a concert? Right? The whole idea is to soothe the Neshama for the Neshama Yisera that went away. Okay. Anyway, the point, my point being, in other words, that it could be that the different Manda Omers over here are talking about which sense did Hashem use by means of which to tell them this. Did they use their sense of sight, or did they use the more ethereal sense of smell? Okay, anyway.
Well,
according to the last one, they used smell. According to the first two, that they saw Michal, or they saw Akrisha, and they said that. Okay, fine. Omer Rama Babachana Omer Bishnam. Shloisha Nevi'im Olo Yimahim Minah Gorla. There were three Nevi'im came up with the Jewish people from Golos. They were Chagas, Chariah, and Malachim. Echad Shehed Lehem Al Mizbeach. One of them gave Eidos about the Mizbeach. Chagas, Chariah, and Malachim. They were the last three Nevi'im in Treyotter. So they all lived at that time. So one of them gave Eidos about the Mizbeach, meaning that the Mizbeach can be up to 60 Amos, up to 60 Amos, like we said before. The Echad Shehed Lehem Al Mokum Al Mizbeach. The second one gave Eidos about the place where the Mizbeach is supposed to be located. The Echad Shehed Lehem Shemakriv and Afishain Bayis. And the third one gave them Eidos. We don't know that. The third one informed them that you can bring korbanos on this Mizbeach, even though the Beit HaMikdash building itself has not been built yet. Because, as the Gemara discussed before, the Kedusha of the Beit HaMikdash continues to exist. As Rambam says, the idea is that the Kedusha of the Beit HaMikdash depends on the Shechina, and the Shechina never completely left the Beit HaMikdash. So therefore, he gave an end. In fact, the Pasuk in Ezra records that after they built the Mizbeach, they started bringing Karbanos on it right away, even though the Heifel hadn't been built yet.
Could bring Karbanos to the
Mizbeach. Even though, as long as you know the place of the Mizbeach, or as long as the Mizbeach built or whatever, even if the Heifel building hasn't been built yet. So that's one of these Nevi'im gave an aid on that. Tertius asked the question, why did one of them have to tell them about the size of the Mizbeach? We have a Pasuk in Yechezkel that says the proper size of the Mizbeach. The answer, Tertius could have answered, I guess, that the answer is this wasn't the third Ris Mikdash, so they didn't know they should follow that, but Tertius gives a different answer. The Pasuk in Yechezkel says, as we said the other day, that the Mizbeach is 24 by 24, but if they didn't have a Navi telling them otherwise, they would think that 24 by 24 is the top surface of the Mizbeach, same as in the first Ris Mikdash. They needed a Navi to explain to them that, no, 24 by 24 means the Macham HaMarach, with the Kronos and with the walkway for the Kronos, 28 by 28. I mean, in other words, that it should be larger than Shlomo's Mizbeach, which they wouldn't have realized otherwise. Okay.
24 by 24 was the net Mizbeach.
Whereas in the first Mizbeach, that net area was 20 by 20. But if they didn't have a Navi to tell them otherwise, they would have thought, when Yechezkel describes the Mizbeach, 24 by 24, he means including the Kronos, including the Hill of Kronos, that kind of thing. Also, by the way, I couldn't even talk about the question, how are Nevi'im able to tell us halachas? Anyway, we know it, Navi can't. Yeah. So there's a couple of different answers. One interesting one is that the Tiferes Yisrael says it's different when it comes to the blueprint of the Beit Mikdash. The very fact, we said before, the whole blueprint was given to David with Ruach HaKodesh. Therefore, yes, yeah, specifically in a Navi to tell you these things. Okay. But Machnisatana, in a Braise, it says...
David was considered a Navi?
Yeah, he was. But Machnisatana, in a Braise, we learn a little bit differently what these three Nevi'im taught them. Again, the one, as we said in the previous version, told them about the maximum size of the Mizbeach, the Al-Makoyim Mizbeach, and he told them also the proper state, the proper site where the Mizbeach is supposed to be located. The second one gave them edus in halacha that you're allowed to bring karbonis on the Mizbeach even though the Beit Mikdash building is not standing. The echad, and according to this version, the third one taught them shehed lehem al turah should be kotzev ashurus. He gave edus that the turah should be written in ksav ashurus, which is the script that we use nowadays, as opposed to ksav ivri that they used before, which we learned about Sanhedrin, the different opinions about when they used ksav ivri and when they didn't. We talked about in Sanhedrin, and there's a long tshuva from the Radvaz about this that says that originally the first luchos were definitely given in Ksav Ashuri, but afterwards that script was meant only for special holy use. It wasn't necessarily meant for day-to-day use, let alone, and maybe not even day-to-day Sefer Torah, throughout the time of the first Ris Mikdash, they used Ksav Ivri until now, at the beginning of the second Ris Mikdash, the Nevi'im told them that it's time to switch.
In Ashur,
Ksav Ashuri is not called that. There is an opinion that's called that because it came with them from Ashur, meaning Babel. But the other explanation, the Gemara mentions, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that it's called an Ashuri because Musheres Shel Ksav. It's the most fortunate, like it's the clearest and most beautiful of all scripts. Yeah. Okay. That would be the nine. But it's Ashuri. Okay. We learn in a Braise the more details about the construction of the Mizbeach. Keren, the Kedesh, the Yisoid, the Ribua, Ma'akven. The following four details are Ma'akven. If you don't have them, the Mizbeach is possible. It needs to have the horns on the four corners, the protrusions. It needs to have a ramp. It needs to have a Yisoid, and it needs to be square. All those are Ma'akven. Midas, Urko, Midas Rochwe, Midas Kremase, and Ma'akven. The length, the width, and the height are not active. There is a size that is supposed to be made, but if you made them a different size, then it's still kosher.
It's interesting, they run in this after the Tavanis.
Yeah.
They should have run it before the Tavanis.
Not necessarily. And we're mentioning it over here because in connection with our Mishnah that talks about the case where you shaft Tavanis on top of the Mizbeach, which was led us into a discussion of which part of the Mizbeach is located and which part of the Azara, so that eventually led us into it. Okay, Menaninu, leaving more, where do we know that from? Because by each of those four details, the Pasuk uses the expression Hamizbeach, the Mizbeach, and Komokim Shenema Hamizbeach La'akiv. And whenever it says the Mizbeach, it means it tells us that it's Ma'akiv. So it says Hamizbeach by each one of them. Rashi says by the Keren, by the Kronos, it says the expression Keren Hamizbeach. You have Yisoid Hamizbeach. The Kevesh is described as Pnei HaMizbeach, which literally means the face of the Mizbeach, and that's the Kevesh, because that's how you go up onto the Mizbeach in that. And the squareness, Ravua Yi HaMizbeach. So all those four details, it says HaMizbeach, therefore it's Machzik. That's the question is, Elameach. So by that logic, if you're telling me that anything that says HaMizbeach is Ma'akiv, what are you going to do about Kiur L'Rebi? What are you going to say about the decorations around the middle of the Mizbeach, according to Rebi, which we're going to explain now in a second what those are, the Soviv L'Rebi Yosef of Yehuda, or according to Rebi Yosef of Yehuda, the Soviv surrounding the Mizbeach, which is also described using the word HaMizbeach. Hochinami de Ma'akiv, are you going to say that that's Ma'akiv also, and you don't have them in the Mizbeach as also? We didn't have them in the list. And where do we see, where does it say HaMizbeach? Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, V'nasasa osa tachas tauko HaMizbeach nolamasa. The Pasuk says about the copper netting that went around the Mizbeach of Moshe's time. I mentioned it the other day, that you have this copper netting where one edge of it marked off the midpoint between the top and the bottom half of the Mizbeach. Yeah. So the Pasuk says you should place it under the karkov of the Mizbeach, from underneath. The Tanya, and we're learning a bright to Ezehu karkov. What is the definition of karkov? Rebbe Omer Zekiur. Rebbe says this refers to decorations that they made around the middle of the Mizbeach, just above the midpoint of it. And in fact, the other day when we were looking at some of the diagrams in the Mizbeach, and we had one diagram of showing a Kohen doing the daubing on the corners in the Mizbeach, and we had showing decorations around the middle of the Mizbeach. That comes from the Gemara over here. Yeah. Okay, so Rebbe says that the Karkov is the Kiyur. Rebbe Yosef Rebbe Yehuda and the Zaf Soviv. Rebbe Yosef Rebbe Yehuda says the word Karkov refers to the Soviv, the ledge around which the Kohen would walk around the Mizbeach. And again, it says Karkov HaMizbeach. So then according to them, you're going to say it's Ma'akiv. The answer is A. Yes, as a matter of fact, according to them, it would be
Ma'akiv. It would be
Ma'akiv, apparently. Because at the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa that you have the famous story over there where one of the Kohen Gadolim poured the water for Nisach HaMayim on his feet, because he was a Sadduki and didn't believe in Nisach HaMayim, because it's only in Torah Shabbat there. And everybody pelted him with their Asurogim. And the Braisa says, Oysayim, what? And the Yerushalmi, I think, says he died. Lahavdil, I don't know if you say Lahavdil, but whatever, Josephus, in his history, tells the story a little differently. He actually names the person. He says it was Yama HaMelech. And no, he says that he didn't die from it, that afterwards he sent his soldiers to attack the Jews. Anyway, the point is, the Braita says, Oysayem Nifgum HaKeren Mizbeach. On that day, the Keren of the Mizbeach was damaged because of all the Astrogim and everything they were pelting him with. They view bull shall malach b'chasmu, so they took a fistful of salt and used it to close up, to patch up the dent. The loyimus nesh kashal avoda, and it's not that actually that salt would make a kashal avoda, because the mizbeach is not made out of salt, it has to be made more permanent than that. So it wouldn't make it kosher, it would be like we said the other day, when the mizbeach was damaged, then you can't eat karbonis, it's a matter. But what they did it just as a temporary measure so the Mizbeach doesn't look damaged. It's not recovered for the Mizbeach to stand there looking damaged. And the reason...
It didn't make it kosher.
By the way, there's the Denver once in a sticha of Simchas Beit HaShezer in the early years, one time talked about the deeper lessons from the story. So most of it is, for example, for this Zuki who poured the water on his feet, that this water represents Kabbalah's oil as opposed to wine. It has a taste to it, it has a flavor to it, but represents avoda that we understand, and he being a Zuki, he felt that such avoda of Kabbalah's oil is good for the feet kind of people, like not the intellectuals, and we don't need it, and if we pour it on his feet, and everybody pelted them with their Asrogim to demonstrate that no, even the Asrogim say that that's even their Asrogim, the Jews who are perfect in Torah and in Mitzvah disagree with you on that. So then it ever goes on to say, what's this business about the Mizbeach getting damaged and then closing it up with a thing of salt? The Mizbeach also represents Kabbalah's oil in the sense that you offer karbonis on there, you sprinkle the blood, and after all, the idea of sprinkling the blood and shechting the carbon and all is supposed to be that a person should feel for themselves, I deserve to have this happen to me, but Hashem is telling me to bring an animal instead and helps him and have a Kabbalah's oil to Hashem and do tshuva. So the message of what happened there with the Mizbeach getting damaged and then having to close it up with a block of salt was, even Kabbalah's oil is no good unless it's accompanied with salt representing chemia satura. It's like salt that preserves food, just like learning chemia satura preserves a person's learning and his end is yoshamayim. If you don't have that, then yes, the mizbeach is going to be damaged and you're not going to be able to have a proper sense of Kabbalah.
So what is chemia satura?
Salt represents chemia satura. You have a Gemara and Shabbos that tells how doesn't use the expression chemia satura, it uses the expression yiras Hashem, but that's chemia satura is meant to bring you to yiras Hashem. But the Gemara calls over there how like when you're storing away grain, you have to store with it some sandy, salty soil, kav chumten it's called, which helps preserve it. So therefore salt is kind of a metaphor therefore for yiras Shemayim, for yiras Hashem, which is brought about through learning chemia satura. Yeah. Continues the Brahma. So Shakom is Bayak Sha'in like Kedan the Kedash for your third really brought also. Because as we said before, if the Mizbeach does not have horns or ramp or the third or it's not square, possible. Rav Yosi Rav Yehoda Omer Afa Soivet. And Rav Yosi Rav Yehoda says also the Soivet. So we see that, yes, since Taukov HaMizbeach, since Rav Yosi Rav Yehoda identifies the Taukov as a Soivet, then yes, since it says HaMizbeach, he holds that that's the fifth thing, which passes the Mizbeach if it doesn't have it.
Why the other
does? Well, why doesn't Rebbe? So the Gemara is going to actually say, the Gemara is going to actually talk in a minute now that there's actually two kinds of characters, but,
so both should be.
No, it's one or the other, but okay, one of them is going to be there anyway, but, and then one of the other one is an essential part of them is there anyway. Okay. Alright, turn it up on them. A zehu character, so we learn in a Braith, so what is the definition of a character? Bain keren lekeren, it's the area between one horn of the mizbeach and the next horn. Mokum hilus ragle akoinim amma, the space where an amma wide in which the koinim walk around the mizbeach. The meaning, in other words, what it sounds like we're saying is, oh, here's that floor plan of the that you're asking for before, but okay, right now we don't need it. Right now, doubtful, we need the other one. I have a copy of it somewhere, but I don't know where it went. It's probably inside one of the other Gemaras. Well, whatever, we'll find it later. No. But what's important for our purposes, though, is like this. Okay, so again, we discussed the other day that the Mizbeach has, you have the four Kronos, then you have the Mokum Hilach Raglach Koinim, this area that's sort of shaded in over there, and then in the end, then you have the Mokum Amara. So the Braitha over here is saying, what is the character? Is the space from between one Keren and the next, the walkway of the Koinim, which is one Amma wide.
See?
So on the face of it, it sounds like the Braitha is talking about this.
That's not the walkway of the
Koinim. That's what Mokum is going to ask. Also, our Koinim and Keren are Keren Abla. The Koinim didn't walk between one Keren and the next. They could end up tripping over the Keren. What are they going to do when they get to the corner? How are they going to go around it? No, you have to change the wording of the Braitha. What it meant to say is that the definition of the Kalkur is you have the area between the Kronos, it's fine. You also have, additional to that, you have another strip, an Amma wide, running all around the top of the Mizbeach, on which the Kronos would walk, this shaded area. Yeah. Okay, so the question is, what do you mean the Kalkur is on the top of the Mizbeach? The pasuk says that you put the kakum netting around the mizbeach below the kakum, underneath it, down to the midpoint of the mizbeach, implying that the kakum is around the side of the mizbeach, not on the top of it. The answer is, Amar of Nachmanis, Shreihamu. There were actually two different things that were called the kakum. Two sovers. Chablam noi. One was there as a decorative thing, six amos above it. Shreihamu means there were two.
Two what?
There were two things called character. One of them was along the middle of the height of the Mizbeach. Remember, we learned before that Rabbi Yossi says that the Mizbeach was 10 amos tall. We Rabbi Yehuda, we said disagreed with that, but Rabbi Yossi said it was 10 amos tall. So six amos up from the ground, you had a little thing protruding all around the side of the Mizbeach, a little ledge, a narrow ledge, protruding all around, that would be the character. So underneath that was the net. The net was called Reshet.
Reshet, okay. Yes. And
so
above that
you have the character, which is a ledge that goes all around the mizbeach. So no, it was made out of wood, like the rest of the mizbeach, and plated with copper. But that is the sovev and the kiur that Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef Yehuda are arguing about. Where Rebbe Yosef Yehuda said it's just a sovev, it was meant to walk around, and Rebbe says it was decorated. It wasn't necessarily for walking around, it was just decorative to beautify the mezek. Anyway, underneath that, they put the michbar, the reshet, the copper netting over there, which reached down to the midpoint of the mezek. So that was one. Chavonoi, one was there just decorative along the side. The reshet itself was an amatol. So right above the top edge of that started the michbar. Then that started rather the kaukum. So that's when the pasuk says tachas kaukum on the mezek melamata. It means that there was a kaukum, there was a ledge sticking out on all sides of the mezek, the decorative, and underneath it was a michbar, the reshet, the network. Yeah. So there was that. V'chad l'koinim v'lin shaku. And then there was another one around the top of the mezeach where they made it. They made it indented into the top surface of the mezeach so this way, like the edges around it would prevent the koinim from slipping. So in other words, the idea is what we're saying is that the walkway for the koinim, the area around the ma'arachah, this one arm wide space, it wasn't just flat, it wasn't just flush with the top of the mezeach. What they actually had was the edges of it were a little, with the edges of it went down a little bit. Like you had, there's the edge of the mezeach, one amma in from the front, and then it went down a little bit to the walkway for the claim, and went across an amma, and went back up to the makom ha'arocha. That way, it's recessed into the surface of the mezeach, and that way the claim can walk around on it and not slip. So that was the second calculus. Okay, another topic. Continuing on the Braitha before, we said midas orker midas rochve in ma'akin. We said or midas kimote in ma'akin. We said the length, width, and height of the mezeach are not ma'akin. So whatever height, whatever width, length, width, and height, you make it a kosher. Amr of mani. Well, Amr of mani. Or eventually, for sending a mezeach off the motion. Provided you don't make it any smaller than the mezeach that motion. The camera, so what was that size? Amr Rav Yosef Amma. So Rav Yosef says that means one hour. Now, when one second. Machaku Ale, so they laughed at Rav Yosef in the Beit Medrash. What do you mean, one hour? Chomish Amis, Odach, Chomish Amis, Yoichel, Ravua, Yeam, and Zeach. The Pasuk says it's 5x5. Amalei Abaye, Duma, Mokam, Ma'arofa, Kamamar. Maybe Rebbe, what you mean is the place of the Ma'arofa. In other words, again, if you have one hour for the cross, after you take away for the kronos, and after you take away for the kronos walkway, you have left one amma by one amma. Maybe that's what you mean. On the lay, the Rabbi Yosef says, good. Mar to Gavri Rabbi, you, Abaya, who are a great person, a great Talmud Chacham, you're the Mai Kamina. You understand what I'm talking about. Everybody else did. Now, on the face of it, though, what it means is what Rabbi Yosef means is the Mizbeach has to be at least the size of Moshe, 5x5. So that it has a Mokam Ma'arocha one by one. On the other hand, the Rambam seems to understand that it means that actually you could conceivably build the Mizbeach as small as one Amma. That when he says Mokam Ma'arocha is one Amma,
it would include everything?
It would include everything, I guess, yeah. Practically speaking, there's not any room for it. No, obviously there wouldn't be room for the Kohen to walk around, but they would have to stand on the floor and reach up to it. But, so it wouldn't be 10 Ammas, tall either, but. So Abaya understood what Rabbi Yosef was saying, but everybody else did not. Kori, they didn't. Well, Kori Alai will bnei Keturah. So Rabbi Yosef used on them the expression, you're the sons of Keturah. As if to say, like Rashi says, you are bnei Abraham, fine, but you're not like the high quality descendants of Abraham, like the descendants of Yitzchak and Yaakov, but rather you're like on a lower level, like the sons of Keturah. You have different opinions whether she was Hagar or not. Rashi mentions on the pasuk that she was, but I think you have different midrashim on it. But yeah,
he married off.
He married her. He married Keturah after Sarah died. But yeah. Okay. Why is he using the expression of the bnei Keturah of all things? So, well, in a way, I mean, Marsha points out it would have been more insulting to call them bnei Esav, for example. How could he call them Bnei Keturah? Okay, I mean, there's a lot of different explanations, and after we're going to learn another story, or we're going to learn another short story also about this, about Bnei Keturah, and then I'll tell you something, among other things, something that says in a Sicha about this, but wait. Anyway, one interesting explanation Son Kadoshin gives is, he says, so what are we saying over here? The Mizbeach of Moshe was 5x5 amos. total top area of it was 25 square amos. Out of it, you had one amma, which is the Makom HaMaariv. Now, you have, the Medrash says,
one by one.
Now, the Medrash says, when Avraham married Keturah, so the Pasuk uses the expression, by Yosef Avraham. Avraham, again, married a woman, and her name was Keturah. So the Medrash says on that, you see that when Hashem adds, he adds more than you had originally, much more than you had originally, like disproportionately. Because with, according to the opinion that she was harder, the first time he was with her, he only had Yishmael, one son. Now he's remarried to her, and he has six, well, fine. But now, yeah, fine. Yeah, fine. Okay. No, okay, fine. But then what happens? He marries Keturah, and all of a sudden he has six more sons with her. So we see that the Tesepeth is sometimes more than the Isser.
So it has to be a different woman then.
No, not necessarily. But anyway, the point being, in other words, so the son Kedushin says that. So therefore, so Rabbi Yosef is saying like this. You guys are not realizing, you're thinking that the 24 other square amas that make up the top of the Mizeah outweigh the one amma by an amma, which is the Makom HaMaariv. In that case, your life makes Keturah. You're thinking the six sons of Keturah somehow outweigh the one son of the one son of Yishmael. So therefore, he called them B'nai Keturah, just to say, like, apparently that's the mentality that you have, that you go according to quantity rather than quality. Okay.
So maybe they were much better than Yishmael.
Yeah, okay, fine. Alright, B'nai Asit, and here's another short story involving B'nai Keturah. B'nai Achsei Zerab Tarfin HaVayachsei Kameh Zerab Tarfin. One time, Reb Tarfin's nephews, his sister's sons, were sitting in front of him, and they weren't saying anything. They weren't saying anything in Torah. They were just sitting there. Pasach V'Omar, so Reb Tarfin started speaking in order to get them in order to draw them into a conversation, in order to get them to speak up. He quotes the Pasuk, Vayosef Avraham Vayikach Isha. Reb Tarfin's nephew.
Who was it?
I don't know. We don't know their names. Pasach Avraham. So he starts by saying the Pasuk, Avraham took another wife, and her name was Yuchni.
Yuchni?
Amri Lai, what do you mean? Keturah. It doesn't say in the Pasuk Yuchni, it says Keturah.
Right.
Again, Kori Alei and B'nai Keturah, and here also Reb Tarfin said on them, you're like B'nai Keturah. You don't know how to properly speak in Halacha. So now, what on earth is going on? So what on earth is going on over here? So again, you have a vast amount of things that different Mephoshim talk about it. Among others is, he's telling them, so to speak, like, B'nai Keturah are chayav mila. We learned about this in Sanhedrin. But like, even though you have the advantage of being Jews, that you're gemalot, but in that sense, you know better than the B'nai Keturah. If you don't speak in learning, then what's your advantage over the B'nai Keturah? No, but nevertheless, so actually,
yeah.
Right, so nevertheless, you still have that B'nai Keturah Achayev. We learned in Sanhedrin, it's actually a machlokas. Rishonim doesn't mean that only the six who were actually born to Avraham are Achayev, and Milo doesn't mean even their descendants after them. And the Rambam learns that way. He says that B'nai Keturah throughout all the generations are Achayev and Milo. However, since nowadays nobody knows who's descended from Yishmael and who's descended from Keturah, they're all Achayev and Milo. However, if they don't do it, then they're not there.
Not
because it's not one of their official mitzvahs, and because it's for any given person. It's a topic. No, it's not one of their official mitzvahs.
According to us, according to us.
I'm not going to answer that. We're talking about according to us. Whatever. If somebody knew they were from B'nai Keturah, they would be obligated to have a bris milah. But since nobody knows who's from Keturah and who's from Yishmael,
well, they could be either from Keturah or from Avraham.
That's the point. We don't know because nobody has a family tree that traces them all the way back to then. Okay. So that's one explanation. As he's saying, like if you're not going to speak in halacha, then you really have no great advantage over the B'nai Keturah. There's a lot of other explanations as well, including that Keturah comes from a word meaning closed up. The kesher in Hebrew is kotar in Aramaic. So like you're sitting there closed up, and then sitting there, and then not talking and learning. Why is he using the word? Why is he using the word yuchni? Why is he after picking that pasuk and using the word yuchni? So again, you have a lot of different explanations and a lot of different tacks on it. A number of the Mephoshim point out that you have a Gemara in Soita that mentions a woman named Yuchni Bat Retivi who used to present herself as a tzaddikus, but really in secret was a machshefa. What she used to do is when a woman was pregnant and close to giving birth, it says that Yuchni would cast a spell to prevent her from giving birth. So then she's in labor over there and nothing's coming out. And people would, she put on an act of being a tzaddikus. So people would come to her begging her to daven for the lady. And then she'd secretly, she'd undo her tissue and the woman would give birth. So therefore, like she made a reputation for herself like a tzaddikus who's in tefillos are answered. So there are a number of them, of course, and talk about that.
Why?
Because she wanted to make a name for herself as a great tzaddikus. Yeah. Anyway, so a number of the Mepharshim point out a certain connection between that over here. Again, the connection may be the fact that Keturah, again, means closed up. So there, and that's like what this Yuchni did. The Rebbe talks about, very interesting, in the middle of a sticha on this whole thing, where in Parshas Chayesara, where it talks about Avraham married Keturah, and Rashi mentions over there that Keturah is Hagar. So in the middle of that sticha, the Rebbe digresses briefly to talk about our Gemara over here, what's going on. So he says like this, because these are Reb Tarfon's nephews. We know, as the Gemara tells us, Roy Bonim Doimim La'achei Ha'ein. Most children usually resemble their mother's brother. So therefore, if these nephews are not speaking up in Torah, then it reflects badly on Reb Tarfon himself. I mean, he's lacking something in his Torah. So therefore, he wants to start by saying something in order to draw them out, in order to get them to speak in Torah. And then he picks specifically the pasuk about Torah, where again she had many children with Abraham to bring down into this world the idea that they should also be able to create children, to be able to think up ideas in Torah, and thus have ruchnius for children. So therefore, he picked this pasuk, but he used the word yuchni again, because yuchni is this machshepa who caused that women first aren't giving birth and then are giving birth in order, like again, to create the same concept over there. They're sitting here closed up and unable to speak, that they should be able to speak and bring forth new ideas. Not saying it was his fault, but in a certain sense, it reflected on him, because if they resemble him, then it means that bedakus, it means he had.
They
resemble him physically, not okay, physically. Okay, I don't know, whatever. Okay, when the Gemara said, okay, but nevertheless, you know, yeah, by tzaddikim, the physical is the spiritual in there. Anyway, the point is, and the Rebbe says over there, actually, that's why the expression Rashi uses over here, when he uses the word yuchni, milsa ba'al mahudika omar, Rashi says, the simple meaning of what Rashi means is he just used salmon expression in order to get them to speak up. But the Rebbe explains in the Sikha, milsa ba'al mah can also mean a word to be brought down into the world. He wants to bring down the toyach of yuchni, which also has to do with Nisim, that explains over there on the basis of another Gemara, in order to bring down Ashfam and Lamaila onto his nephews to make them be active in Torah. And when in the end they didn't, when all they could say is B'nai Torah, then he called them B'nai Torah in the sense that you still haven't reached the point, the Yuchni point yet, you're still like closed up over there and you haven't been able I'm trying to work on you. We don't know. I think this is the only place that where these nephews are mentioned. I don't know. I guess not. All right, onward. Amar Abaye bar Huna, Amar Abchama bar Guria.
So you see that from a great tzaddik like him, you could still have...
Well, nephews are not together. Nephews. I mean, again, nephews are sister's sons, but again, you know, I mean, so the idea is that he wanted to bring them up to a higher level. That's why he's quoting this pasuk about having children of Avraham, and then specifically using the name Yuchni, but apparently it didn't work completely. Okay. On the other hand, at the end of the sefer, the Rebbe also relates to the idea over there about B'nai Keturah being chayiv in Brit Mila. Like he called them B'nai Keturah, again, not necessarily as a derogatory thing, but like to say, okay, at least you do have this advantage. You should be able to accomplish what's accomplished by Mila, which is even higher than Shem Avaya. Mila is a...
So they did not have the Mila?
No, obviously they had a Mila, but in other words, that he calls them B'nai Keturah, like to evoke by them that at least they should have, they should be able to have the advantage, the ruchnistic advantage that's brought about through having Brit Mila, which where Brit Mila explains in a mimer, that Mila accesses an aspect of Elokos even higher than Shem Avaya. By calling them B'nai Keturah, he meant to evoke that level. All right. Okay. I'm going to buy
him a favor.
Yeah. I'm going to buy by Huna, I'm going to call him by Guria. Zirin Sha'asa Moshe, the pieces of wood that Moshe made. Now we know Rashi explains that every day, as part of the avodah in the morning, and
Abaye
bar Huna, Omer. Yeah, that's not the thing. No.
Tzimis Abaye
is Abaye, whatever, he was the nephew of Rabba. Later on, at the end of the Masechta, it says his father's name Kailil, but his father is almost never, I think his father is mentioned only in that one place in Shabbos. That's it. Okay. So, Amar Abaye Bahuna, Amar Abchama Bahuna, Zirin Sha'osa Moshe, the pieces of wood, the standard size pieces of wood that Moshe made that are going to be put on the Ma'arocha, that are going to be put on the pile, on the wood pile on the Mizbeach. Now we know, in particular, Rashi says that there's a part of the Avodah is that every morning when they bring the Tamid Shoshatar, the one Kohen brings two pieces of wood and puts them on the Ma'arocha. Aside from the fact that they set up the Ma'arocha before that, they have a special mitzvah to bring two pieces of wood, and in the afternoon also two pieces of wood, although then two Kohen carry it. There's a kosher that says in the pasuk, "Will be your other Kohen eating by broker by broker." So you have such a concept.
The wood that used to have something on top of it? Or just...
This is just two pieces of wood to add to the wood pile. Yeah. The purpose is to feed the fire or whatever it is exactly the purpose, but yeah. And we say it every day in Davening. That's what it is, setting up the pieces of wood. Okay, so those pieces of wood, Moshe made them in a standard size. Orkan Amma V'rochban Amma, they were an Amma long and an Amma wide, which is exactly the size of the Makam Amarocha, as we just said, because we just said there was an Amma by Amma. The Ovion, and their thickness was Kemachak Goydish Sa, was like, the thickness was like a piece of wood, that was like the thickness of the piece of wood that is used to sweep off the extra from a Sa. Meaning, we learned in Baba Basra, the standard way of measuring things in those days was, like when you were measuring that grain of flour or what have you, you'd pour it into a container, it would make a heaping thing, and then you would use a standard size stick to level it off.
Right. And then you would exact
volume. Then, yes. So they had a standard thickness for that kind of stick. So that was the thickness of these pieces of wood that they used for the Ma'arocha. So Rav Yirmiyah says, for that purpose they use a shorter than usual amma. Because, Rashi says, the whole point is if the Makam Amarocha is one amma by one amma, you don't want the pieces of wood sticking out into the space where the Kohenim are going to be walking, then they'll trip over it. So therefore, of necessity, they have to make them using a short amma in order that it'll fit into that area. Amar Rav Yosef, the Lav Heiner Tanya, so Rav Yosef asks, isn't this what it says in the, what about this that it says in the Braisa? Al ha'etim asher al ha'esh asher al ha'mizbeach. So Rabbi Yosef is saying, isn't, what about this that it says in the Braisa? That when the Pasuk says al ha'etim asher al ha'esh asher al ha'mizbeach, that you put the pieces of the korban on the wood, which is on the fire, which is on the mizbeach, we learn from that, shaloyu etim yosim min ha'mizbeach klum, that the wood should not be sticking out anything from the mizbeach. Meaning in
From the Ma'arocha.
What meaning of
the word? The
but from, no, so that's the point. Rabbi Yosef is saying, therefore, you shouldn't really need a short amma. All you should need is they're exactly an amma and no more than that, so they don't stick out, but they exactly stop at the line. So why are you telling me that it should be shorter than that? Tosfos brings another gusa that it wasn't amma gduma. Tosfos brings from the Aruch that rather it was amma gruma, which actually means a larger than usual amma. In which case, Rabbi Yosef is asking, what about this that we're saying in a braisa that they shouldn't be sticking out? In that case, it has to be an amma exactly. Either way, Rabbi Yosef is saying there should be an amma exactly. So that's the thing. So Tosfos would say that the braisa had said that they're longer, that they're slightly longer than an amma, and Rabbi Yosef is objecting, based on a braisa, it seems they have to be exactly an amma in length. Okay. Fine. Okay. Now moving on to the next part of the Mizeach, Tnan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Midos, Kevesh Hoya the Dromish on Mizeach, there was a ramp. No, there was a ramp on the south side of the Mizeach. Right? It was 32 amos long and 16 amos wide. We'll deal with, by the way, later on in the...
He said it has the same dimensions of his meat as the Mizeach.
Right. So, I mean, we're going to talk about later. Eventually, we're going to get to later on, we'll get in the Gemara to talk. In particular, we'll discuss the question. When we say 32 over here, do we mean the length of the slope of it was 32, or do we mean the length of the base of it was 32? We'll get into that tomorrow, Rav Hashem. Anyway, so the ramp was 32 long by 16 wide. Okay, so I'm going to ask Menahan and Mili, where do we
go? We said that it's very 32.
Okay.
We didn't mean the top.
Okay, but you could understand it that way. Okay. We'll see. Well, yeah. But then the Kevesh was on a float, so therefore you have to ask.
Are you taking the bay?
That's the question. Are you taking the bay, or are you taking the float? We'll see. We'll get to it. Okay. Okay. Minah Hanimili, where do we know specifically that the Kevesh should be on the south side? Omarokona. Omakra, because the Pasuk says, the Shachat Oseh Ayurecham is Be'ach Tafoina. The Pasuk says, regarding an Ola, that you should check it on the leg, literally Yerach means the leg of the Mizeach.
Right.
On the leg of the Mizeach to the north.
Because you said that it means very close to the Mizeach.
Yeah, it means to the side, but it means, but the fact that it uses the word Yerach, where it's going to use the word Sad or something, means she had Yerach Vatsofon upon a Vadorin. So to speak, the Mizeach should be like a person who's lying down with his feet in the direction of north and his face towards the south. So therefore, in other words, if the Yerach is to the north, then the head is in the opposite direction, therefore towards the south. And since the Kevesh is described as the face of the Mizeach, because that's how you go up on there, therefore it has to be on the south. So the question is why? Why? Picture it like a person who's sitting up straight, where his head and his feet are both facing in the same direction. So maybe it means the Yerach and Mizeach is on the north, and the Kevesh is also on the north. Amar Rava, so Rava says, no, but you have to picture it. Yeah, finally, you can still have it. Okay. Amar Rava, Rami Gavra Ahasa. So Rava says what you do is you picture it like a person who's lying down on the floor, Rami Gavra Ahasa literally means throw the person down on his face, meaning like imagine him lying down on the floor.
Lying down on the floor, meaning what? Face down?
Meaning that his, it doesn't matter face down, face up. The point is that his legs are in one direction and his head is in the other direction.
So the legs is what?
So if we're saying it's a leg, the Yerach is in the north, then the face is in the south. Omalei Abaya Adrab, it's just for Oysa Gavra. So Abaya says, on the contrary, you should argue that compare it to a person who's sitting up straight. So again, so the head and feet are facing in the same direction. Omalei Ravua. So Rava says to him, yeah, the Pasuk describes the Mizbeach as Ravua. And the word Ravua, besides meaning square, also means lying down. You have one of the cognates that you often have between Lashon Kodesh and Aramaic is you have a lot of words in Lashon Kodesh that have a tzaddik and in Aramaic they have an ayin. You have a number of examples. So in Hebrew and in Hebrew is on what?
Rasa.
So therefore rova in Hebrew, which means to lay down, is rova in Aramaic. Yeah. So therefore ravua. So ravua means, in other words, we're understanding that it's an Aramaic word, meaning that it's lying down. So the question is, you already need the word Ravua to teach us that the Mizbeach is square. And in fact, we said before that's one of the things that's massive. Fine, the answer is Mishpid Meruba. Okay, but the topic, if it wanted to say that it's square, it would have said the word Meruba. Instead, it says Ravua, which implies lying down. Okay, so the question is really Taimeach Mishpid Ravua. Okay, but if it meant lying down, then it would say the word Ravut, lying down.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't learn.
The answer is Amalei, exactly. So he says, Ravua, Sib, the Mashmahachi, or Mashmahachi. That's the point. It used the word Ravua, which has a double meaning. It means square, and it also means lying down. Because again, if it wanted to mean only square, it would have said Ravua. If it wanted to mean only lying down, it would have said Ravut. By saying Ravua, we have both. Okay, so that's one way of understanding how we know that the Kevesh is located on the south side of the Mizbeach. The Tana Maisel Amehoch. On the other hand, a Tana of a Braita learns it from a different source. The Tana, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, when Yechezkel describes the Mizbeach, and again, he's not innovating new halacha, because a Navi can't do that. He's recording what the halacha is and how it's going to be also in the third Mizbeach. So he says the expression about the Mizbeach, Uma'aloi Sehu, and the way to go up here, Knois Kodin, should be that you're facing towards the east, which means we learn from it. Kol pinah sha'ata pinah la'yu el derech yamin la'mizrach. It means when you're turning, you should be turning only to the right, so that you're going eastward. In other words, place the kevesh in such a position that when you first turn right, when you come up onto Mizbeach and you're going towards the east, so that you're having both. So you're turning right and you're going to be facing east. The only way to do that is to have the Kedesh on the south.
If you want to be
that you're walking around the Mizbeach, walking towards your right, as we talked about before, when you're walking on the west. So if you start out on the south and you turn right, then you're facing east, which is what the pasuk means when it says Knois Kodim, that the turning should be towards the east.
When you face on the south.
When you're walking up onto the kevesh from the south, and then you turn to your right, you're facing east.
Right.
If you put the kevesh on any other side, it wouldn't work. So therefore, that's what I mean. Okay, so the question is, why? Who says that? It doesn't say anything about turning right. Maybe it means you turn left to get to the
No, okay, we have to turn right.
We don't know that from the spot because as Malo said, it doesn't say about anything about you mean.
When we said when we're,
fine,
when
but how do we know that? How do we know that from that itself? We have to learn.
Okay.
So that's the question. But in a smaller mizrach, maybe it means that you turn towards the left and then you're facing east, which would mean that the kevesh is on the north.
Right.
The answer is Lloyd talked about it. You can't think that way. The Tony Romi by Yechezkel, because Romi by Yechezkel taught a bright that it says as follows. Yam sha'ot the Shloimeh. The yam that Shloimeh made, the Pasuk describes in Melachim and in Divrei Hayamim, how Shloimeh made a big yam, a big copper tank, It's called the yam because symbolically it represented the sea. It was meant as a mitzvah for the Kohenim. And the Pasuk described, it was placed on top of 12 sculptures, statues, whatever, of oxen made out of copper. So like you have three on each side holding it up. That's how it was supposed to be. Again, it's all part of the Chesav of Miyad Hashem Elayim. It was all part of the blueprint. The Gemara mentions elsewhere, or to Yerushalmi, I don't remember, that the feet of the oxen actually were hollow so that water could flow up through them. You had an atom, which we learned before, a spring that is 23 amas higher than this mikdash. The water would flow down there by gravity. And then it would eventually come to this Yamshel Shloimeh. It would go up through the feet and the bodies of the oxen and fill up the yam. Yeah.
So there's a reason for that?
Yeah, I mean the deeper reason, I don't know what the deeper reason is exactly, but whatever. That's how the blueprint is supposed to be. So the Pasuk describes, Omid al Shneim Oster Bakar, check out the word Amudim, that's not in the Pasuk. The Yamshel Shloimeh stood on 12 bronze copper oxen, and the Pasuk describes them, Shloisha Ponim Safona, three of them facing the north, or Shloisha Ponim Yama, three to the west, or Shloisha Ponim Negba, three of them are facing toward the south, or Shloisha... Yeah, Shloisha Ponim Mizracha, and three are facing Kedma, actually three of them are facing towards the east. Now, why does the Pasuk list the directions in that order? North, west, south, and east. That's going towards the right. From that we learn, that teaches us that when you're turning, it means, in other words, so if you start out with the ones that are facing north,
yeah,
that are facing north, and then you're standing in front of them and looking at them, then you go around to the ones that are facing west. Which way are you going? You're going towards your right.
When you're facing the ones that are facing north,
I mean, you're looking at them facing south. And then you're walking over to the ones that are facing west.
Oh.
And you're going to be standing looking towards the east. You're going to your right. And so forth with all the other ones. From that we learn that all turns that you make should only be to the east, towards Mizrach. The question is, what are you talking about? That pasuk you need to teach us that there were three oxen on each side. The answer is, okay, pointing normally. Fine, but in that case, it doesn't have to repeat by each one pointing. It doesn't have to say three facing in this direction and three facing in that direction, etc. The extra word pointing means that the pasuk wants to teach us something about the way that you should be facing when you're going around to do one thing versus another. By the way, this whole thing about going towards the right has applications in other areas of halacha also. It has an application among other things when we light the menorah on Hanukkah. We start from the newest candle on the left, and we go towards the right. So we should be going towards the right. Actually, in the times of the Rishonim, actually there were different minhagim on that between Bnei Reinrus and Bnei Estreich. What we do actually, the fact that we set up the candle. No, it's not Shamash. The Shamash is a little different thing. Do you start from 8 and work your way down to 1, or do you start with 1 and work your way up to 8? Later on, in the times of the Rishonim, they developed a difference in Minhagim between Bnei Reinrus and Bnei Estreich, the people near the Rhine and the people in Austria. Of course, whether you start at the right end of the menorah and go left, or whether you start at the left and go right. What we do nowadays is kind of a compromise between those two. We set up the candles. We set up the candles from right to left. We keep on adding new ones going left, but then we light them from left to right. Yeah. So that's meant to, that way it fits with what we're saying over here, that you put point of the yin. That's where you're turning towards the right.
You could also light them in the middle and go right and left.
No, but then you're not doing any yin yang.
Yeah,
but there's no reason to. Sam Sofer talks about an interesting thing in that connection. He says it's so important to go to the right. Why is Hebrew written right to left?
Why
is Hebrew written right to left? It's so important to go to the right.
Why does the Greek?
Sam Sofer asked the question.
Yeah.
And he says the reason is like this.
Why does Hebrew written right to left?
Hebrew, the Lashon Kodesh. Yeah. Why is Hebrew written right to left if it's so important to be going to the right?
Right.
But he says like this, an interesting fact. He says, because when we know when you write a Sefer Torah, you're not supposed to end on the middle, on the end of a line. You're actually exactly supposed to end in the middle of a line.
Right.
When you write the words La'ene Kari Yisrael, it means someplace in the middle of a line.
Right.
If you were to write, if our writing system was like English and like most other languages, but left to right, it would come out that last line wouldn't be going all the way, wouldn't be all the way to the right. It would be starting at the left, but not quite going all the way to the right side. So therefore, we want to have the right side is important. We want to have the last line. We want to have the last line also be touching the right, and therefore that forces that the whole writing system goes right to left. Yeah, it's an interesting fact from yeah. All right, we'll stop over here and continue tomorrow.